and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Being watched after the U.S. air attacks on Iran, nuke sites, the price of oil that affects gasoline. Iran threatening to block the Strait of Hormuz, through which a lot of oil tankers pass. That's where Iran's oil goes to, says retired Marine Colonel and ABC News contributor Steve Ganyard.
50-60% of the revenue, the government revenue for the Iranian government, comes from oil revenue. So they would be sort of cutting off their nose to spite their face.
So far this morning, oil on world markets is not going up or down much. Iran's foreign minister is in Moscow to meet with Russian President Putin. Nearly 150 million Americans under heat alerts from Texas to Maine. Many heat records could be shattered. Forecasters say cooling off with family at a water park in Milwaukee, Nova Rios.
When I went underwater, I felt it like I was like really cold.
New NBA champs Oklahoma Thunder beating the Indiana Pacers 103-91 in Game 7. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. With just days to go until the deadline to approve a new biennial budget, Republicans in the state Senate don't appear to be in agreement on a plan. A new biennial budget must be signed by July 1st, or spending levels will remain the same as they were under the last biennial budget. Some Republicans, like State Senator Chris Kapenga of Waukesha, say they may be better off with the old budget to avoid giving Governor Tony Evers a chance to use his partial veto power. Governor Evers previously used the partial veto to increase school funding for 400 years. Republican state lawmakers have proposed legislation that would change the way the school voucher program is funded. The bill would use the state's general purpose revenue to fund school vouchers rather than state aid and local property taxes. Proponents of the legislation say it would provide property tax relief to residents and could increase state funding for public schools. Critics of the proposal, including Governor Tony Evers, raised concerns about the possibility of choice schools receiving more funding than the state's public schools. A groundbreaking ceremony for a new library building in Cable is scheduled for this weekend. Forest Lodge Library is inviting area residents to celebrate the groundbreaking at the Highway M site on Saturday at 11 a.m. The organization received $1.8 million in funding from the Flexible Facility Grant Program and community donations for the expansion. The library currently has about 1,000 square feet of space. Officials say they've been using a nearby church to store some of their collection, which staff walk to multiple times each day. The Burnett County Sheriff's Office says the Federal Aviation Administration is investigating the Wednesday crash that saw a small plane crash into Mudhen Lake in Daniels Township. According to a press release, the crash was reported at around 3:15 on Wednesday afternoon. The pilot of the plane, identified as 79-year-old Craig Johnson of Hudson, was the only occupant of the plane and was not injured in the crash. Authorities say he managed to exit the plane on his own and was found on a pontoon boat operated by a Good Samaritan who saw the crash. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
It's the Brewers and the Pirates. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight as the Brewers open a home series against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Milwaukee now just 3.5 games out of first place after sweeping the Twins over the weekend. 9-8 yesterday at Target Field. The Brewers had a 9-3 lead thanks to Rhys Hoskins with a double, a home run, and two runs batted in. But closer Trevor McGill had to come in the eighth to hold off Minnesota. Pat Murphy says catcher William Contreras also doing a great job setting up batters, and praised McGill getting his 17th save of the season already.
The kid's been pretty consistent. He knows who he is. And again, William Contreras was great back there.
NBA Finals, Oklahoma City pulled ahead to win the title in Game 7, 103-91. Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle on losing his star player from Oshkosh, Tyrese Halliburton, to a torn Achilles tendon in the first quarter.
What happened with Tyrese is all of our hearts dropped.
That's Rick Carlisle with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Partly to mostly cloudy with highs in the low to mid 80s today, and then we do have a chance of thunderstorms later this afternoon into this evening. Some of those could be strong to severe with hail, wind, even a tornado possible. So stay weather aware later today. Scattered thunderstorms mid 60s tonight, showers in the mid to upper 70s tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 79.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Civic Media News Director Charlie Pittman joins us to cover all the weekend news. And then we're talking ticks in hour number two with entomologist PJ Leash, the bug guy. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Monday morning, June 23rd, 2025. Another beautiful morning to have you here. Live from Lake Wissota, here up north, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, listening or watching us on all of our different platforms. Thank you for starting your day right here. I got a question for you. How'd you do with the heat? Yesterday, here in the Chippewa Valley, we saw a little bit of weather history. The warmest low temperature ever recorded. The warmest, the highest low temperature to start a day, like 82 degrees was the low. But I have to tell you, with that south wind at about 20 miles an hour, between either being on the boat, if you could do that, or if you could find a shady spot with the breeze, it was actually nice. There were plenty of places that I'm sure it was just stinky hot, you know, but with that wind and with a little bit of shade, you could make the most of it, especially if you reminded yourself what 20 below feels like in the dead of winter. Suddenly things feel a lot better, don't they, after you have something like that. So we'll talk more about the weather with meteorologist Brittany Merlot an hour from now. There will be, as that heat bubble, you know, moves off, there's a front coming through. There will be some showers and thunderstorms. The radar right now shows showers just firing up across the border, coming into, River Falls and heading toward Menominee and eventually the Chippewa Valley. Then there's more behind that that'll fill in. So some folks are going to get a little rain today, maybe a little bit of thunder. And then Brittany will tell us about the rest of the forecast coming up in just a little bit. Coming up this morning, Kristen Lyerly is in Washington, D.C. At some kind of a conference or event. We'll find out what she's got to say about, the weekend's news. She will be joined in our second hour by Tracy Ann Mangold, a former Republican Party official from Northeast Wisconsin who has left the party. And based on news reports over the weekend, it's looking like state Republican Party Chair Brian Schimming may be out, or may be about to be out of a job running the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Again, you've got this fight between what remains of traditional Republicans versus those whose embrace of Trumpism threatens to tear apart their party as much as their president has done to the country. So we'll talk to Tracy and Kristen a bit more about Brian Schimming's potential future. We'll talk to Jimmy Cuska with a little weekend sports. The Oklahoma City Thunder won Game 7 of the NBA Finals, but the bigger story was Oshkosh native Tyrese Halliburton going down with an injury early in the game, and it sounds bad. It sounds really bad. And then in our third hour, we will talk to State Representative Francesca Hong. She will give us an update on the state budget process, and based on a clip that I saw recently, It sure seems like Republicans in the Capitol are still behaving the way that the ones in the U.S. Capitol are behaving, and that's downright autocratic. You know, rather than do anything bipartisan with Democrats when it comes to taxes, education, health care, they're just pretending that we have a system of one-party rule in this country and try to ram through whatever they can. So we'll talk to Representative Hong about that, who clearly has fans in both Alicia and Tony, pointing out that Fran Hong will be here. And Alicia says, yay, two of my favorite people, which could that could be Kristen and Tracy Ann. It could include Fran. It could include, maybe it's Fran and Parker. Maybe it's Kristen and Parker. I don't know.
Pat, don't sell yourself short. You could be somebody's favorite.
I could be one of somebody's two favorite people. Yeah. It is possible. Parker Olson joins us in Madison Studio A2. And if I talk about witnessing baseball history, I am not talking about Jacob Mizorowski's near-perfect game on Friday night, though I'll get to that. But Parker saw his own bit of baseball history covering the Madison Mallards over the weekend. What'd you see?
I saw a no-hitter, Pat. It was really cool. It was a lot. It was a complete game no-hitter, too, which was really special because I don't know that you see a lot of those hardly anymore.
No, you don't. And what was the pitcher's name? I don't have it in front of me.
Isaac Milburn. He's a pitcher. He goes to Purdue.
And two walks, was it, that he gave? Was that his only blemish?
Yeah, two walks. One, I want to say, second or third inning, and another in the eighth. Mm-hmm. And the Northwoods League does have pitch count limits, so we were kind of creeping up towards, oh, God, is he going to be able to start another inning?
Oh.
But they are very smart about this, and I am very appreciative of this, even though he didn't quite get to that point. They bump up how many pitches you're allowed to have if you have a no-hitter going.
Oh, okay.
So that was very nice.
Well, that's very prescient on their part to come up with that rule and go, hey, by the way, if there's no hitter.
You're doing something cool.
I was actually looking that up because of Jacob Mizorowski, who you'll recall, if you missed it over the weekend, in his opener for the Brewers, his first game as a major leaguer, 5 innings of no-hit baseball. And then he left in the sixth inning after giving up a walk and a home run, but still. In the game on Friday against Minnesota, he had a perfect game, 6 innings of perfect baseball, 18 up, 18 down, and then gave up. What did he give up on? Wait, was Friday the walk and the home run?
I think he gave up a walk and a home run. The home run was the first thing he gave up, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yes, because, yeah. Anyway, he's got 2 wins, and he's given up 1 hit. That's never happened in the modern era in Major League Baseball. So I guess the Baseball Hall of Fame has already asked for Jacob Mizorowski's cap.
I sure would think, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is just stunning to watch this stuff. And again, I hate sounding old, cynical, whatever. I'm just kind of like, enjoy this. It might be too good to be true because, you know, you're throwing so hard, so much. And he's a big dude. He's what, 6'4"?
6'6", I think.
6'6", okay. But it's fun to watch, man. You've never seen, I mean, you can see a breaking ball. You can see a curveball, you know, dip, dive, duck, dodge, whatever. But to see it do that at like 95 miles an hour,
yeah,
that's borderline insane.
That's the thing. You know? His slider, too. I think he might have one of the fastest sliders in the league. It's ridiculous.
It is so fun to watch. And you just can't not root for this kid, especially when he had a perfect game going, you know, into the seventh inning. And, you know, again, in both cases, he didn't get the no-hitters or the perfect game, but the Brewers won. They gave some run support. They swept the Twins over the weekend. A little bit of drama yesterday. They almost kind of sort of tried to give it away late in the game. But, you know, they won just the same, and that's 4 games in a row now. After beating the Twins yesterday 9-8, Rhys Hoskins homered and doubled and drove in 2 runs. Bryce Turang hit a 3-run homer. Caleb Durbin had 3 hits for the Brewers. They are now at a season high 8 games over .500, and the Cubs lost again. So now they trail the first place Cubs by only 3.5 games right now. So the Brewers come home. They're taking on Pittsburgh, and Let's see. First, let's get the pregame time on this. 6:05. There you go. Brewers versus Pittsburgh. Coverage begins at 6:05 on several Civic Media stations. And get this. there's the game tonight. There's the game tomorrow night. And then there's a Wednesday afternoon game. The Wednesday afternoon game is going to be Jacob Mizorowski versus Paul Skeens, who was basically the Jacob Mizorowski of last season, right? I mean, he was like the young phenom that nobody could hit. He's a bit more mortal this time around, but that could still be so much fun to watch.
I am very excited. I am sort of considering leaving work early and possibly getting those tickets.
It's a good thing we're not on live radio where the boss can't hear that, because that would be, But no, look, if you can be the first one to snag up those tickets, you should absolutely go. And that's one where I wouldn't mind a pitcher's duel one bit.
Yeah.
I was commenting yesterday's game, 9-8, and there were like 34, 35 hits in the game total. And if you're going to sit and watch a baseball game, 95 degrees and the heat index is 102, you don't want to watch a pitcher's duel. And that's fine, because with the air that hot and everything, the ball was clearly carrying out, you know, when you've got a score that big. But for these two pitchers on Wednesday afternoon, if they both are lights out and the Brewers can, you know, eke out a 1-0 victory on Wednesday, I'm totally happy with that.
That's exciting baseball. Yeah.
And then there's Garrett Mitchell. Garrett Mitchell, who, again, I thought was the entire future of the franchise, and then he got injured, and then he got injured coming back from the injury, and then he got injured again, and he just got injured coming back from the injury. His left shoulder, which was what he was recovering from, he slid hard into a base on Friday, I believe, and may have knocked his left shoulder out of whack again. So there's that. And then there's third base prospect Brock Wilken, who injured his left knee while celebrating.
That's what he did? Game.
Yes. Garrett Mitchell did his injury in class in AAA ball in Nashville. And Wilken injured his left knee celebrating in Biloxi, where they were celebrating the first half championship. So what had been happening to the Brewers starting pitching is now just happening elsewhere, you know, which is part of the game. It's a game of injuries. And amazingly, the Brewers pitching staff is, I mean, for all the injuries, still pitching lights out, still one of the best in the league.
Yeah, no, it's actually incredible how good they are for how much trouble they've gotten themselves into.
Yeah. So, you know, congrats to the Brewers for sweeping the Twins. Hopefully they can get some of their prospects back. I don't know. again, Pittsburgh series this weekend as we continue on. I mean, it's still early. It's June 23rd. I get it. That's totally fine. But you got to have something like this to cheer on along the way. So let's see. So we've checked out a little sports here. We've updated the weather. I do want to tell you a bit about some of the products that you'll find over at the parent company of Up North News. That, of course, would be Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network, he hastens to add, with all kinds of newsletters and podcasts and things like that. For example, there's Melissa Ryan's Control-Alt-Right-Delete. That's a weekly newsletter devoted to covering the rise of far-right extremism with a little bit of nationalism, disinformation, and online toxicity. And in her most recent column, the violence seen in Minnesota is not a bug. It's a feature. The Republican Party incites it and suffers no consequences for its actions. Melissa Ryan's newsletter can be found over at couriernewsroom.com. You can also get Mark Jacobs' newsletter, Stop the Presses, all about how far-right extremism is being covered in the national media. There is also a weekly newsletter by Nina Burley called American Freak Show, and this one is about how white Christian nationalism has led to political violence, the likes of which we saw tragically just over a week ago in Minnesota. Now, when we come back, we will get an update on what's happening or what happened in Iran over the weekend. And a little bit of background on it, but more importantly, this whole notion of is it a one-off, as people like to say, because, hey, if it is, that's great. It's only taken us 40 years to get to that point. but there might be a reason why nobody else has tried that prior till now. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News now has 7 newsletters a week, one a day. Christina Lurie puts together our Monday through Friday with a mix of Wisconsin news and features on Saturday, one that focuses on the positive side of sports. And on Sunday, this little program, Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, has a newsletter called Sunday Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. And we kind of sum up the week's news. We also have a question of the week, and it's garnering a lot of responses already. And it deals with the University of Wisconsin system and state support for it, which kind of stinks when you compare it to the other states. We are 44th nationally in terms of public funding for our public university system. And it hasn't always been that way. It's been, 14 years of Republicans running the legislature that has continually chipped away at one of the crown jewels of the state's economic engine. And it's hard to say how much more sustainable that is given the closings of some 2-year campuses, the layoffs that have hit some of the 4-year campuses. How much longer can you eat your seed corn? So we ask in our question of the week whether the UW system should have that big boost in state support from the next state budget bill, or should we simply maintain things where they are? Or Republicans last week were talking about actually cutting the amount of state funding that goes to the UW system. Maybe that's how you feel about it as well. A couple of folks do. Most are definitely option A people in terms of supporting our university system. So folks are finding that out over at our weekend newsletter. You can sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Or if you have some thoughts on the question now, you can send me an email. Radio@upnorthnewswi.com is the address there, and we'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Alicia says, it's just so sad that we have sunk that far down in public funding of our universities. Couldn't agree more there, Alicia. She says, you guys are so busy. How do you get any rest? I don't know. Compounded by the fact that had the two younger grandkids here for the weekend with one of our daughters, and they're still here. They're taking off a little bit after the show. So I always warn people, not warn, I advise you that there's a chance that a three-year-old or a six-year-old could be toddling through here at any point looking for a donut. I mean, they probably won't because, you know, there's cartoons on and things, but just in case, you know that it's there. Then I've got the older grandsons, 11 and 18 now. And that's the reason that current events are kind of on my mind as well, with one turning 18 and the other will be a young man before so much longer. And what kind of world are we turning over to them? Especially one where a president who never served in the military, who used his wealth and privilege to avoid service, and who has denigrated the military, has taken the military for granted and put it on parade as a vanity project, has now engaged the military into an act of war against Iran, and believes that this is just some kind of a push-button thing. You know, we push a button, some planes take off, they drop some big bombs, and that's it. And that's the comments that you hear from President Trump and some other allies, and especially among far-right Republicans, is that this is it. This is something we've been waiting to do for 40 years, you know, since the Iran hostage crisis, and finally we're punishing Iran, and that's it, and this is a done deal. Who do you think you're kidding? That this is some kind of a one-off, and that Iran will just roll over and say, yep, you got us. Our supreme leader will step down as you wish, and you guys who we think are the devil, we will just do whatever you say. Is that really what you think happens next? Because that's certainly not what, you know, concerns me when I think about, you know, your kids and grandkids and mine. Like the rest of the world, we now wait to see if this reckless gamble done without congressional authorization or, frankly, any kind of cooperative effort or bipartisanship, if it leads to terrorism, if it leads to cyber attacks, if it leads to military action that puts American troops in harm's way, all for a president who originally scrapped the landmark deal that had been working to keep the peace. And I can hear the scoffing, and I can already see the scoffing in the comment section as well. But it was working. And frankly, when it ever looked like it wasn't working, we had an ally in Israel that would take that kind of military action that, again, would set back any nuclear ambitions and not directly involve the United States. If you think any and all retaliation is going to be against Israel now at this point, again, you're fooling yourself. It's always been a challenge to make sure that Iran can't go the way of North Korea, for example. Or any rogue states now. I mean, we live in a somewhat stateless society, and that if, God forbid, there ever is some kind of a nuclear detonation, it probably will not come from a country. It will come from a faction someplace. And so all options have to be on the table, including military action where appropriate. But again, military action that is, shall we say, a bit more surgical and a little less ham-handed. Because the Trump administration has somebody who's heading up their office on terrorism right now, who is, what, 22 years old and fresh out of college, because that's how little Donald Trump thinks of the intelligence community assessments. This is all difficult work. I'm not telling you that there are any easy answers. I am telling you that engaging in actions like this without consulting with Congress, without some kind of a declaration of war, has the prospect to open up all kinds of consequences that we can barely fathom. Hopefully this is a one-off. Hopefully. But for decades, we've tried to run our foreign policy on something a little bit more concrete than hopefully and a couple of bombs. More after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Oh, yes, the world is an uncertain place on a Monday morning, and the markets are reflecting that. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell. Just a quick look at what news is influencing our markets, and while the market is definitely focused on the Middle East, let's not forget, there's another ticking time bomb to our north that will need to be dealt with. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney says the clock is ticking on a 30-day schedule for the United States to put a trade deal framework in place with Canada. Deadline set July 21st. And Carney says his government has a plan in place if that deadline is not met.
President Trump and I agreed to pursue negotiations towards a deal within the coming 30 days. Canada will adjust its existing counter tariffs on U.S. steel and aluminum products on the 21st of July, at the end of that 30-day period, to levels consistent with the progress that's made at that point on the broader trading arrangements with the United States. We will review our response as the negotiations progress.
Those words from Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney. In addition to adjusting counter tariffs, Canada says they'll limit federal procurement policies that favor Canadian suppliers and reliable trading partners by the end of the month on June 30th. So like I said, a lot of emphasis this morning on the Middle East, and rightly so, but Canada also waiting for a little attention. So what are the markets doing in this early hour? We'll take a look next.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Friday, the barrel cheese dropped 3.25 cents to 165.75. 40-pound block cheese was down 2.5 at 166.5, while double A butter dropped 2.75 cents on Friday to 250 a pound. Now, this morning, markets are paying attention to the global tension. Currently, we've got December corn down a nickel at 436, November beans down 3, 1058, July wheat's down 2 at 566. I'm Pam Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Partly to mostly cloudy with highs in the low to mid 80s today, and then we do have a chance of thunderstorms later this afternoon into this evening. Some of those could be strong to severe with hail, wind, even a tornado possible. So stay weather aware later today. Scattered thunderstorms mid 60s tonight, showers in the mid to upper 70s tomorrow. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 79.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Todd Michaels joins us now.
I have to give a shout out to Oshkosh. It's a very underrated city.
There was also a restaurant there I really liked. I don't think it's there anymore.
Yeah, the Tally's was great. I may have gone to like a prom dinner there or something like that back in my day too, Pete.
A little calzone before you tear it up in the dance floor.
Man, there's nothing better than wearing a tuxedo and a little calzone in your cummerbund.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers. through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm live from Madison, where I welcome the Green Bay Automobile Gallery's Daryl Burnett. And we rank our all-time favorite summer blockbuster movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Hey, if you can't listen live and would rather listen on demand or just listen back from time to time at the things we do here, mornings powered by Up North News here on the Civic Media Radio Network, you could pod this program. Listen to us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify. Subscribe to the show, and you can also find us on Apple. You can listen to back episodes over at civicmedia.us as well. We'd love to have you along as a subscriber. Across the Civic Media Radio Network today, a matinee on air follows this program at 9 o'clock, and at 9:35, Sholly Pittman, the new news director at Civic Media, will be a guest of Jane's and Greg's. The Wisconsin bug guy, P.J. Leisch of UW-Madison Entomology, joins them just after the 10 a.m. news. On the Todd Alba Show this afternoon, State Senator Kelderoy, she's on the Joint Finance Committee, and will give a budget update at 2:30 today. And as a reminder, we will have State Representative Francesca Hong coming on at 8:30 this morning. And on the Maggie Dawn Show from 4 to 6 this afternoon, Matt Rothschild is the guest host, and Elin Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council will be talking to Maggie just after 4 o'clock, a follow-up conversation after the U.S. attack on Iran. So all that and more coming up across the Civic Media Radio Network throughout the course of this Monday morning. Let's see, Cassandra writes in on YouTube, my mother-in-law had said Trump was the only one that would keep us out of wars. Now my brother-in-law, a pilot, is deployed and we worry every single day because our president is so inept. And I think, again, that's one of the things that really puzzles me, I guess. I'll ask Kristen Lyerly about this in just a second as well. But the ability of people to pivot so easily from, I'm voting for Trump because he said he's going to keep us out of wars, and he's the only guy that's going to keep us out of war, to, yeah, we're going in. We're going to plant that American flag in Tehran, baby, or whatever it is. It's like, wait a minute. Not that everybody's doing that. You see some real breaks in the Republican Party right now of people going, hold on. Did he just get us enmeshed in something that, like Afghanistan and Iraq before that, are we about to commit to years and years of follow-up to something? Because people are going, oh, no, no, this was easy peasy, lemon squeezy, we're done. Yeah, just like when we went into Baghdad after the first couple of weeks and we're like, oh, yeah, mission accomplished, right? Not so much. So, and again, we'll talk to Tracy Ann Mangold in our next hour about some of those divisions within the Republican Party that last to this day, all happening in Northeast Wisconsin, the home base of one Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's not in that home base today. She's traveling yet again today, but can certainly talk about what's happening back home in her neck of the woods. Dr. Lyerly, I believe, is in the nation's capital, right?
I am. I am in Washington, D.C., and it is hot and humid.
It is, isn't it? It's just... I mean, it was, 86 when I went to bed last night? I think it was 83 when I woke up at 4:30. It's been a weekend. I don't know. Did you manage to beat the heat? Were you able to stay in a bunch of air-conditioned meetings?
No, I went clubbing.
You went clubbing? Okay.
We have meetings all day today, so, you know. Sometimes you just got to get out and do some dancing.
Okay. And this is... For ACOG,
okay. This is, so today, Pat, is the Dobbs anniversary.
Okay.
And there is a storytellers conference here in Washington, D.C., sponsored by an organization called Free and Just. It's great because, as you probably know, 1 in 4 women in this country will have an abortion in her lifetime. There are so many stories to be told, but they're stories that often go untold because they're hard to tell. They're deeply personal. They're loaded with shame and so much challenging context. But this is a place where we bring people together, including our friend Heather Martell from Chippewa Falls. Mm-hmm. And we're talking to each other about how do we tell our stories? Who do we tell our stories to? in order to help people understand that, yes, abortion is healthcare. Here's why.
And it's the kind of thing that you and I have been trying to do for the past couple of years here. And it's clear that more and more people understand it or understood it and, you know, now just don't feel so alone. But the threat remains out there as much as ever. And so when we say, you know, every election is going to be, you know, the most election, the most important election, you know, in ever, it's probably going to be true, especially for women for the foreseeable future.
Can I quote you on that? Every election is going to be the most election forever.
It's going to be the most important, the most important election forever.
Monday.
Yes, it is.
It's true, but it seems like I don't think that we're overblowing things. You know, like when you look at what's happening in the world. Yes, and we don't realize that we are at the epicenter. I mean, I was out talking to people who live in the district. They look at Wisconsin. It's an outpost. They recognize how important our state is because we are the state that is the most closely divided. So the decisions that we make literally impact the rest of the nation. And that's why it's so fundamentally important that we make good, solid, well-informed decisions based on conversations that we have with our neighbors about the issues, not which team you're on, but what do you need to live your life? How can our leaders do a better job for us? How can we fight for the future that we all need?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, there are people who can still be as fiscally conservative as they want or have conservative positions on a number of things, but draw the line at, you know, government controlling what they can do with their bodies. And that's where, again, it's okay to leave your party membership at the voting booth, you know, as you head into the voting booth and make the choice that's right for you. And that gets us into what we'll touch on here briefly, but then more in our next hour. And that is the precarious position of state Republican Party Chair Brian Schimming. There was an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel over the weekend and no shortage of rumors elsewhere that there are a lot of people, especially from the Trumper side of the party, who are dissatisfied with him, you know, losing another state Supreme Court seat. Yet despite, you know, Donald Trump winning, you also have fair maps. And so they're losing some of their legislative majorities. And according to the report, he'd been told that a majority of executive board members of the state Republican Party are ready to fire him unless he resigns. He says he's not resigning. It does not go into any further detail as far as how many are on the board, how many have they reached, you know, and so forth and so on. But it does go on to say that a lot of this comes out of Northeast Wisconsin, where, as you know, and we've talked to Tracy Ann Mangold before, and we will next hour, the county parties in that region have been especially vocal on one side or the other, the traditional Republican side that sees Trumpism as a convenient aberration, and those who see Trumpism as, you know, the way, the light, and the truth, the way, the light, and the future, or whatever else you want to put it. I mean, those divisions are very much on display in your neck of the woods.
Tracy is going to be a wonderful resource in this conversation because she is a party insider. She's a former leader within the Republican Party. So talking with Tracy is always enlightening. But Pat, it's not. There are 11 counties in the 8th Congressional District. It's really only three of those counties. And it's really a handful of people who are very vocal, very, frankly, ugly in their speech, in the way that they treat each other and treat their fellow Republicans. So this is not the majority of people who identify as Republicans. This is just a handful of really ugly, squeaky wheels who are making it hard for everybody else and, frankly, hard to get things accomplished in the state.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's our topic in our 8 o'clock hour when we have Francesca Hong here. And I think, I don't know, you're so busy, but did you get to see a video clip she put up where she was trying to make points about the state budget in a committee hearing? And Joel Kitchens, the Republican chair of the committee, just kept talking over her and saying, you know, you've got to stick to the budget. You've got to stick to the you know, the relevant question here. And she's like, I am. All of these things are interconnected. We have to talk about state support for education. We have to talk about state support for health care. And if we don't, I mean, your state budget bill can't just be tax cuts for the rich, Kristen. We expect a little bit more of our leaders than that.
What? Really?
Yeah. Believe it or not.
I know. That is the one thing. If you could boil it all down to one problem, that's the problem. It's the lack of vision and insight that this budget is for the people of Wisconsin, and the people of Wisconsin have a variety of needs. That includes a strong economy that works for all of us, but also education, childcare, affordable housing, you name it. You can't pull any one of those things out of that potpourri and say, you've got a complete package here. It has to include every single piece of it, and people like Fran get it.
Oh, she does, as opposed to, as Tony puts on YouTube, as opposed to Joel, I'm a veterinarian, but really an OBGYN, kitchens. Referencing back to
he
a
never
comment.
Claimed to be an OBGYN, but
no,
he did claim to be the expert. Yes.
The expert on reproductive systems or whatever, more than anybody else in the assembly chamber, which is, you know, a rather deep well of knowledge right there, folks. Yeah, I know. Look,
I like Joel Kitchens. I'm going to be honest. Like, I've worked with Joel Kitchens on some really important birth control bill. You know, we've had great conversations. He's not a mean, ugly person. There are just some really fundamental things that we agree on, like women's health care. I'm sorry, Tony. Tony says, don't step on my joke, Kristen.
look, it was when he said that at the time during assembly floor debate a couple of years ago, it got our attention. It's like,
it did.
Yeah. Anyway, on today's history lesson, which is coming up in just a couple of minutes here, but let me jump ahead to one of them because the Food and Drug Administration on this day in 1960, so it was 65 years ago today, the FDA declared, is it Enovid or Enovid? Enovid to be the first officially approved combined oral contraceptive pill in the world, leading to common usage of the term the pill. And it just reminded me as I was writing that up last night that that's not so much in our lexicon now because there's so many other, you know, birth control methods that are out there. But for those first couple of decades or so, just saying the words the pill was borderline scandalous for its time.
Well, because it was illegal. Remember, yeah. It didn't become actually legal to use birth control until the 70s.
And it was when it was first legalized, it was for married couples only. And there was all this talk of, well, we can't legalize this for single people. I hate sounding like grandpa here, but if people could just look back and realize what these debates were like you've said many a time, where women could not have a bank account on their own. You know, they couldn't get access to birth control. They couldn't get credit cards. There's all these things that we've finally moved into. And yet now you're feeling people in powerful positions want to rip some of that away.
Women had to get their husbands to sign off on their birth control prescriptions. Yeah. We didn't invent up in Door County. And there was, as we were talking and taking questions from the audience, there was a woman who said, yes, in order for me to get my birth control. And luckily she was in a healthy relationship at the time. So they laughed about it. But she said it was ridiculous that I had to get my husband's permission to use birth control. And you're right, Pat, we don't realize how scandalous the pill was or what it took to bring the pill to market. There's a fascinating book about all of the controversies and how challenging it was to even get it there. So it's always been an uphill battle. There have been some times that have been much more challenging than others in this struggle. But, you know, we've got to keep pushing it forward and making sure that people have access to the healthcare that they need, because contraception is healthcare. Abortion is healthcare. Women need healthcare in order to have healthy babies and grow our families and live our lives.
All right. So that's just from one aspect of today's history lesson, which we will have coming up here in just a bit. Selena Heller is off this week, so Kristen will be back in just a bit. We'll talk more about things that are on today's calendar of historical events and musical memories. And a reminder, the Brewers start a new series here after sweeping the Twins. They will now be taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates, and you can catch the pregame starting at 6:05 on several Civic Media stations. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more. I'm Pat Kreitlow, here up north.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin, sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Again, we are primarily a radio show, but for the folks that can watch on social media and watch Kristen's face light up when Duran Duran comes on.
Yeah,
she's right back at the club, boys and girls. She's right there. One night at the Roxbury with Kristen Lyerly. And that is because The Reflex by Duran Duran was the number one song this day in 1984, though with a footnote, it went to number one only after being heavily remixed by who, Kristen Lyerly? You know?
I don't know.
Nile Rodgers of Chic.
Of course.
Super producer. Yes, exactly. So there you go. Number one song, 1984. Was this the one that like turned you into a Duran Duran groupie, or was it some other song that you first went, ah, this is it. This is my band.
I think it was Hungry Like the Wolf and MTV. By the way, there is a wonderful podcast about the history of MTV. And if you are of my era and MTV was really important to you back in the day, listen to it. It's fascinating.
Is this the one with the original VJs, or is this an external one?
Is there one with the original? Alan Hunter is in it.
Okay. We'll compare notes later on. All right.
Okay.
Let's see. I mentioned Tracy Ann Mangold's going to be on next. She clearly just tuned in because she's right there in the comment section. OMG, Kristen is the best. I had thought about calling you. She said, I wish we could have gone. Oh, well. Fox Valley Pride was a good time. All right, so all kinds of good things to talk to Tracy about later. On this day in 1973, on the album charts, the new number one album was by George Harrison.
It
Tracy Adds now on YouTube. Do not remind me of how old Kurt Loder is from MTV. Mm. Yeah.
He was old back then.
Yep.
TRL. All of these things, like the show The Young Ones. Do you remember that? It was so dumb and so delightful all at the same. Like, all of these things pop in and you're like, yes, the memories. The
I'm trying to think. When did they jump the shark? When did it start to end for MTV? And I think of reality shows, which, of course, leads me to say Sean Duffy killed MTV. I mean, I think it might be that simple. On this day in 1962, Ray Charles topped the album chart with Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music by Ray Charles. On this week in 1979, the Charlie Daniels Band released their newest tune. One boy's run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan picking out those. Makes you wonder how many people took up the violin or the fiddle because they heard the song and wanted to be this good. And imagine the first time they tried to play this.
How fast they give up.
Or how many people didn't pick up the fiddle because they were like, yeah, I can't.
No. Yeah.
That's right. Happy birthday to Jason Mraz, who is 48 years old today. On this day in 1868, Latham Scholes, the publisher of the Kenosha Telegraph, who also served in both the State Assembly and Senate, received a patent on this day in 1868 for his invention, the typewriter. So it's type-writer. Others had been working on a similar invention, but his creation a few years later of what's known as the QWERTY keyboard is the keyboard that we still use today. The QWERTY keyboard, a Wisconsin invention, which makes perfect sense once you learn to type, but while you're learning to type, sounds like the dumbest thing in the world. Why are the letters put the way they are?
F-F-F-J-J-J. F-F-F-J-J-J. That was typing class.
Oh, yeah, mine too. A-semi, A-semi, A-semi.
Oh.
Let's see.
See what you missed out on, Parker?
I don't remember.
No, they just do video games and things and pick it up along the way. Tony writes, I think it's fair to say Sean Duffy killed the video star.
Sean Duffy killed the radio star. It works.
It does. It does. Uh-huh. Let's see. On this day in 1987, a 15-year-old Tiffany began doing shows in malls starting in Paramus, New Jersey. 5 months later, she would have the number one song. She was doing a remake of a Tommy James and the Shondells hit, I Think We're Alone Now, which was a hit in 1967. She made it a hit in 1987. And we thought, oh, that's a big gap between, you know, 20 years between the time it was a hit. It's been 38 years since then now.
Were you a Tiffany person or a Debbie Gibson person? Because that was the dyad.
Yeah, a Debbie Gibson, because she was writing her own stuff. Which I appreciated very much. On this day in 1991, a new video game is released, Sonic the Hedgehog, on the Sega Genesis platform, soon beginning a popular franchise. So Sonic the Hedgehog is 34 years old today. And finally, this week in 2012, sometimes you wonder, how do these songs get to number one? Well, you know, at the time, they're new. They're novel. Here's Carly Rae Jepsen, number one, 2012.
Really? 2012?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, right? Let's see. Today is National Porridge Day.
No.
I'm looking at the National Day list for the first time here today. And
what exactly is porridge?
Now you've stumped me. What's the difference between porridge and oatmeal?
That's a great question.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, we'll put
it. Oatmeal-ish.
There's our new question
for British
of the
people.
Week.
What is porridge?
This is International Women in Engineering Day. This is National Detroit Style Pizza Day. Brought to you by Rocky Rococo.
There you go.
I do like that.
And this is National Hydration Day.
Ho ho!
Seems like we talk about that a lot over here. And yep, there he is holding up that big old bottle of water. I think,
yes,
Alicia
sir.
Said she's already a quarter of the way through my first 40-ounce cup of water. Stay hydrated, peeps, she says.
Mm-hmm. It's hot.
Could not, Could not agree more.
That's right.
Not as much as yesterday, but still a warm one. Hydration is still extremely important. Tracy Ann Mangold is going to join us coming up in our next hour. We're going to talk about the infighting in the state Republican Party that might lead to the ouster of the state GOP chair. We'll also get the updated forecast from Brittany Merlot. Jimmy Cusco will help us talk about sports. The Brewers sweeping the Twins over the weekend. Back home now to face the Pirates with a huge pitching matchup coming up at American Family Field on Wednesday afternoon. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Pentagon experts are continuing their assessing of how much damage the Saturday U.S. air attacks did to Iran's nuke program. Iran's foreign minister is in Moscow to meet with Russian President Putin. ABC's Andrew Dimbert.
Here at home, law enforcement also on high alert. Homeland Security warning state and local officials of a heightened threat environment.
Nearly 50 heat records for this day could be equaled or broken, forecasters say. About 150 million Americans are under heat alerts from Texas to Maine. A lot of folks have much to clean up, says ABC's Allison Kosick.
New York's governor issuing a state of emergency for more than 30 counties after heavy rain and dangerous flash flooding slammed parts of the state. Outside Utica, at least three people were killed, including six-year-old twins. The violent weekend of weather stretching across the country.
Took seven games, but the Oklahoma Thunder beat the Indiana Pacers and are the new NBA champs. This is ABC News.